History through the eyes of those who lived it. This is Hometown Heroes, presented on the air and online by the U.S. Army, proudly honoring the men and women from every branch of our armed forces whose service and sacrifice have secured our freedom. Now, the host of Hometown Heroes, Paul Leffler.
Welcome to another edition of Hometown Heroes, the program that reminds you no matter where you live in this great country of ours, no matter how big or how small your hometown might be, there are some untold stories right around you that really should be untold no more. We want to honor our veterans for their service and sacrifice, preserve their stories so we never forget the price that's been paid for our freedom. And when we do that, we learn a lot. We're educated. We're entertained. So often, we end up inspired by these stories from our greatest generation. Of the more than 16 million Americans who served in uniform during World War II, fewer than 20,000 of them, that's a little more than one-tenth of 1%, were Americans of Chinese ancestry. In other words, it's not every day we get to meet a Chinese-American veteran, but chances are you've never met anyone quite like Ray Lee, 95 years old, of Fresno, California. We're going to learn a lot about him today, and let's start with the early years. Born in San Francisco, he was raised initially in Fresno by his Chinese immigrant grandmother after his mother left the family to pursue an acting career. What do you remember about your childhood, Ray?
Grandma took care of us when we were kids, and she was really strict, disciplined us, and we had chores to do to keep us out of trouble. In fact, we lived in Fresno for quite a few years till we were able to move over to Kalingo. My dad had a restaurant over there, so we went over there, stayed over there, and started my schooling there, and graduated from high school in 42.
What was it like here in Fresno in the 20s and 30s?
Well, the population was small, and it wasn't congested like it is now. You can able to get around. People were more friendlier, and we kept to ourselves, and we lived in Germantown. We had a lot of German friends we had, and my landlord was German. We rented a house from them. It was $18 a month. That was a lot of money in those days, yeah, and it was quite an experience.
Well, and I've heard some stories about Chinatown back in the day. Do you have any memories of Fresno's Chinatown?
Yes, I do. I went to Chinese school. My grandma insists that we all go to Chinese school to learn the language. And I went to two schools, one on G Street between Mariposa and Tulare on G Street. That was an old brick building. It was kind of a spooky place. It's a really spooky old building. Yeah, we had most of the Chinese kids going to school there. And I had one rough teacher. He was a mean sort of guy. I never forget him. Yeah, we were supposed to learn the language and behave ourselves and try and get ahead in our education. That was taught by our grandparents. They insist that we all go to school, learn the language, and try to prove to the people that you are somebody. Make something out of your life.
In Fresno, in this area at the time, did you feel that you were treated any differently because you were Chinese?
Yes, we had a segregation, Southern Pacific Railroad track. That was the line that we cannot go over that Southern Pacific. That was it. We were supposed to stay in that boundary line.
What would happen if you didn't?
People would ask, what are you doing over here? Get back over there on the west side. We didn't want to argue with it, so we just turned around and go back.
Did that bother you at all at the time, or was that just the way life was?
Well, it kind of set me off. And then when I was a kid, it kind of set me off. But I always have a memory of that, not to go beyond the Southern Pacific Railroad track. And finally, after the war, things loosened up, and we were allowed to go across that track, go to the theater over there, the Warner Brothers, Wilson, Kinema, and the Hardy, and the Fulton Street Theater. There's quite a few of them over there.
And how old were you when you moved from Fresno to Kalinga?
Oh, I was about 14, 15 years old when I moved over to Kalinga.
And that changed your life a little bit, it sounds like, huh?
Yes, it did. We had hardly any Oriental student over there. We had mostly the white kids. We got along real fine. Some of those kids are one of my best friends. We had made a lot of good friends over there. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they were down to earth.
The history of Kalinga was that it was a big oil town. Right. And your dad had a Chinese restaurant there?
Yes, he did. The first Chinese restaurant there. We had a Buckley Hotel. And down below used to be a bar. And it was a vacant place. So my dad happened to talk to the landlord, and she rented an office to us. The half of the building, upstairs and downstairs. It was interesting, yeah.
What was the restaurant called?
It was called a China Cafe. My dad, he used to run those kids out, you know, the high school kids used to come in and raise hell on a Saturday night. My dad used to go out to the front dining room and tell them to calm down or get the heck out of that place here. they respected my dad, because my dad was quite a fighter. He was a very athletic type of a gentleman. He was a fighter.
And did all four of you kids have to work in the restaurant?
Yes, we did. That kept us out of trouble. We had to finish up schooling, and we come after school, we would go down to the restaurant to work till about 8, 9 o'clock. Then we go home.
So what'd you have to do at the restaurant?
Well, we had to peel the vegetable, onion, dry onion, a green onion. We stand on a soapbox on top of a sink and wash dishes, and sweep the floor, mop the floor, clean the latrine, and stuff like that. We had odds and ends, a lot of work to do in the restaurant. You fill up the salt, pepper, fill up the napkin dispenser. We had a lot of things to do. We couldn't mess around. My dad was watching us, and we had to do what he tells us to do.
And so Kalinga High School at the time, sounds like your family were some of the only Asian faces there?
We had about two Asian family beside ourselves, one Korean and two Chinese family. Two of them was running a grocery store, and one had one Korean family working out in the oil field, standard 25D, and that was about it.
Well, you told me your class of 1942, so that tells me that your senior year at Kalinga High School, the world changed a little bit. Do you remember December 7th, 1941?
You better believe it. Me and my dad was going down to the restaurant. We were riding in this vehicle, and then we got to the back alley. We pulled in, and our neighbor next door, he had a dry cleaning establishment, and he hollered over the fence that Pearl Harbor had been attacked by the Japanese. And we didn't know where Pearl Harbor was. I said, "Where's Pearl Harbor?" My dad said, "I don't know." I said, he asked me, "Do you know where it is?" I said, "No, I don't." So we had the radio going on all night and found out it was in Hawaii. And it was quite a shock, yeah. And then we was thinking, geez, we're going to have to get involved in this, which we did.
Well, and what was it like at school the next day?
Everybody knew about Pearl Harbor. Everybody was in a state of shock. And we had several high school students that graduated before our class did. They were in the military. Some of them were lost in Corregidor and when they got overrun by the Japanese in the Philippines.
So you knew some of those guys?
Yes. They used to come in the restaurant all the time. We'd get to know them. And then they all enlisted in the Army. Some went in the Signal Corps and some went in the regular department. And we all knew that they were all in the Pacific, in the Philippines, and they were all taken prisoner, or we didn't know what happened to them.
So they could have been on the Bataan Death March?
Yeah, they could have. We never heard from them anymore. There was quite a few people missing from Kalinga, quite a casualty from Kalinga.
Have you ever found out anything more over the years about what happened to him?
No, I didn't. Since then, we moved out of Kalinga, so we lost track of those gentlemen. One was a Mice. I forgot his first name. We call him Apple Mice. He had a brother over there, worked for the Chevrolet garage. And he used to come in to the restaurant all the time, order fried rice. He loved fried rice. And we call him Apple. I got a nickname for him.
Well, when did you end up in the Army? And what about your brother? Which one of you went in the service first?
My brother did. He went in the Navy first. And I tried to get in the Navy, but the quota was all filled up. I tried to get in the Air Force, the quota was filled up. So I tried the organization that I really liked, but there was no opening. So I decided, I'm not going to wait any longer. I went down the draft board, told my head I want an immediate induction. I want to get this thing over with. So I volunteered, had the draft board take me in.
How did your family feel about that, about you and your brother going off to war?
Well, they had no choice. They knew that we had to do it. We had to go and do our duty. We had to go and show people that we were proud of what we are, so we all volunteered.
I guess that's something I should ask, too. Did you have family in China that you were aware of that maybe had been oppressed by the Japanese?
No, we had, my grandma did, but she lost track of them, but I had no knowledge of them. She didn't say too much, but she always sent money back to the village where she came from to support the family. She tried everything she did financially to help him. She was a good grandma.
I get the sense she had a pretty big influence in your life.
She sure did, man. Well, she said, jump. You ask how high you jump. Man, she was strict. And that's how we turned out. We turned out real good.
Well, what was it like when you did enter the Army? You said you wanted to get in the Navy or the Air Corps, and it didn't happen, so you're in the Army. Did you have an idea of what they'd do with you?
No, I didn't. In fact, they didn't tell us where we were going after we got our equipment and clothing issued to us at Presidio Monterey. They got us all on this train, and they didn't tell us where we were headed for. So we rode the train for 2 nights and 2 days or something like that. It was a long train ride, and we was going down the southern route, New Mexico, down in there. One morning, we were still sleeping, the train stopped. I said, hey, the train stopped, I told my buddy. Pretty soon, we heard a big military band out there playing Deep in the Heart of Texas. I said, we're in Texas. We landed in Austin, Texas, Bastrop, Texas. That's a small town like Pinedale. Camp Swift, that was a base we were had a basic training. They run the hell out of us, man. We were all 18 years old. And they got us off the train early in the morning, and they had us standing in formation, and they had these 2.5-ton trucks standing by, about 4 or 5 of them, and a sergeant in charge, he had a list, and he hollered out the name, and we say, ho, say, truck one, and call another name, truck two, 3, 4 trucks. So we jumped in the truck. When they called me, they, truck four. I said, what the hell are we in? We're in the Army, but we don't know what outfit. Anyhow, we didn't know. So they pulled guys out, put them on different trucks. They shipped them to infantry outfit and engineer and headquarters. When we found out we was a medic, I said, hey, I don't know anything about medics, medicine. You know, the guy said, you soon learn how to do things like that. So we was in the medics.
Well, and I want to hear what they taught you about that, but I guess I should ask too, because you mentioned at Kalinga High, you said, I think, 3 Asian families in town. What about in that whole group of new guys in the Army, all these 18-year-olds?
No, except when we got to the camp, they had a cannery. They had Asian cooks in there. Asian cook and an Asian sergeant from L.A., Sergeant Clarence King, who was a good cook. He gave us a good meal.
The reason I ask is I think, especially young people today, they're shocked when they hear that the military was segregated in World War II, and that, you know, there are all black units and all Japanese American units. But then, you know, Mexican Americans, Chinese Americans would get sprinkled in with all these white soldiers. You're all wearing the same uniform. Did you feel that unity, or did they make you feel different?
No, they didn't. I got along with all these guys. They accepted me. I'd mind my own business, did what they told me to do. I don't know, I'm on my own, but I didn't give them any bad time. I just did what they told me to do.
Well, and you said you didn't know anything about being a medic. So what did they teach you about that?
They made a selection in a group of our company to send some up in Colorado, one to Fort Simmons. It's a hospital up there. And then they sent me down to Beaumont General Hospital in El Paso. I went to school there. And then they sent people back east to California. Oh, different general hospital, military hospital. They have an instructor there, teach you the main thing about first aid, all the medication, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. What to do, how to do it, stuff like that. We learn a lot.
And while you're getting all that training, your brother is flying with the Navy?
Yes. He was stationed in South America. He usually tell me he goes on a patrol watching for submarines, stuff like that. They had a lot of German submarines in that area. Of course, the German and the Argentina country were buddies, so they had a watch for him.
If you pull up the Hometown Heroes page on Facebook, you'll find a photo of Ray's brother Warren in his World War II Naval Aviator's uniform, as well as one of Ray in the uniform of the 97th Infantry Division. We're going to hear how he was training to go to the Pacific, but first ended up in Europe, and here's some of the things he encountered there. Not only did he give our country some of his best years in World War II, Ray later spent 27 years helping to establish and maintain an outstanding Veterans Museum in Fresno, California, where he still lives today. Hometown Heroes will be right back after this. Do you ever have those moments where you realize you've been settling for less than the best for far too long? Sometimes we just accept the status quo without looking around for better ways to do things. And I've got to tell you, when it comes to your money, I believe I found a better way with EECU. Take a look at myeecu.org and you'll see why. EECU is not a bank. It's a nonprofit credit union that's all about taking care of you, the member. That's one of the reasons EECU just keeps growing and growing. Close to 300,000 members now in 10 different California counties. Over 30,000 ATMs, free mobile banking. And what I really love is how EECU always goes above and beyond to serve the community. In 2013, the leadership and generosity of EECU helped establish Central Valley Honor Flight. More than 1,000 veterans now have gotten to see their memorials in Washington, D.C. for free. And that's just one example of the community involvement EECU takes oh so seriously. Pick up the phone and become a member today. 1-800-538-3328. That's 800-538-3328.